This episode of the Glass Half Empty podcast is brought to you by Kingsford. Another MLB season is in the books, but there's no off-season when it comes to grilling. Keep Kingsford lit and stay stoked.
Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win! Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown, a game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Weed. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined by Casey Smith from Barstool Sports. Casey co-hosts the Comeback Season podcast with Johnny Manziel and his agent Eric Burkhart. She is on Barstool's Saturday College Football Studio show, and she is a regular appearance on their Sirius XM channel 85. Casey, how's everything going?
It's fantastic. I'm happy to be here with you.
So the big story in college football right now is Bama-LSU. How great would it be for all of our talking points if LSU can somehow beat them at home at night, and then there's chaos in terms of everything that we have in front of us in the rest of this season?
It would definitely make it complicated because everybody's talking about the SEC bias right now in the college football playoff rankings because they put LSU above Notre Dame, who's obviously undefeated. However, my storyline all year, and I'm sticking with it, Ryan, is that I think Alabama is not only the best team in the country, I think that this could be the best team that Nick Saban has ever had. So I need Alabama to win just because that's what I've been saying all year, and I'm sick of hearing from other people that they might get beat. So that's what I'm sticking with. Alabama is going to beat LSU even on the road in Baton Rouge.
So they are a juggernaut. That's undeniable. I mean, I always like, because they're like 38-point favorites all the time, so I bet against them hoping that like the other team's starters can beat their backups in the last like 10 or 15 minutes and catch me a late backdoor cover. But I will say we haven't seen how Tua plays if they are in a tight position in the second half. Now, granted, last year when he had that huge comeback, that wasn't exactly stress-free, but we haven't seen him play like a four-quarter tough game, and if LSU gives that to him, it'll at least be very interesting to see how he responds.
Yeah, that's the craziest thing about Tua is that he's not played in the fourth quarter this entire season, which is crazy because we're in week 10 right now. The fact that that's happened is just wild to me. But you're right. I mean, LSU obviously has a really good defense. They're without Devin White in the first half because of the targeting call on Saturday, so that'll be interesting. But it's weird to me to see an Alabama team that has a better offense than a defense, because we're so used to seeing an Alabama defense. That's the reason that team is so good. Now you're seeing one of the best offenses in the country with a Nick Saban defense as well. So it's going to be closer, obviously, than most of the games they've played. What their best win? A&M, maybe. I guess Alabama's best win would be Texas A&M. But I still think that they're that explosive and that good that they'll be able to beat LSU at night in Death Valley.
Even as an A&M grad, you have to admit that LSU at night is the best scene that exists, maybe not just in college football, but in all of sports, right?
I can agree with that, and that's tough for me to say because obviously games at Kyle Field are pretty amazing, and I've been to Michigan, I've been to Notre Dame, I've been to a lot of those iconic places, but Baton Rouge at night, Death Valley at night, I did a couple of games there when I was working on the sidelines for ESPN, the SEC Network, and it's amazing. It's amazing, and anybody who's not been to a game in Baton Rouge, like, you've got to get down there. If you love college football, that is probably the number one stop that you need to visit.
What's your top five in college football that you've been to?
As far as stadiums or games?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that real quick?
No, you're fine. Okay. As far as the stadiums themselves or just like the atmosphere?
Yeah, the stadiums and atmospheres. What are your top five?
Well, I have to go with A&M first because that's not, you know, that's just my bias, but that's fine. I mean, Kyle Field is electric. I've grown up going to those games, so I'm always going to put Kyle Field first. I would put LSU at night second. I would probably put Michigan third. And now I've not been to all of them, so that is my prerequisite. I've not been to all of them in the country. I'm going with just the games that I've been to. Tuscaloosa, when Alabama's playing a really good team, Tuscaloosa's popping. And then I went to the Florida State Florida game in Tallahassee, Jameis Winston's last year when he was there, and that was an electric scene. And just I felt like I was in a different world in Tallahassee then. I mean, as good as they were, and having him on the team, and it's a different kind of electric, but it was awesome. So I definitely have to put Tallahassee up there as well.
Cool. Have you been to Wisconsin or Penn State?
I have not. So those are two that I have not. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 are the two conferences that I've been to the least amount of games. And I have not done a game or have not been to a game at Clemson, which obviously that's a place that a lot of people really like. I spent most of my time in the SEC and the Big 12 and then kind of popped around other places. But Wisconsin, you know, here at Barstool with Big Cat, I mean, Wisconsin's always always a topic of conversation. And so I definitely need to make it there. That's for sure.
Yeah, I also went to Wisconsin. I've been to LSU at night. I've been to Bama at night. And I've been to Michigan. And I've been to Ohio State, and I think Ohio State's really good, as much as I hate to say it. And
I'm going to see you. Penn
State in a couple of weeks, so I'm excited about that, although this isn't the marquee matchup that we thought we were going to a couple of months ago, and that might diminish it a little bit.
Do you think that Big Ten stadiums, in comparison to SEC stadiums, like, would you put the Big Ten above the SEC from what you've seen, or would it be...
I put the SEC above the Big Ten because in Wisconsin, the Badgers are second to the Packers. In Ohio State, the Buckeyes are probably number one, but they have a lot of interest in like the Browns and they have LeBron. With Michigan, they've got like a long history of Detroit sports as well. But if you go to Alabama or LSU, I know they have the Saints in Louisiana, but LSU is definitely like they live and die for those 10 Saturdays in a year that they don't quite do as much. Now, there's certainly people in Big Ten country whose weeks get ruined when they lose and who their college football team is their end all and be all, but it's just a greater percentage of them in the SEC as far as I've observed.
I agree with you. And that's an argument that we have inside this headquarters all the time is the SEC versus the Big Ten, because there's a bunch of us that are split down the middle. But especially when you look at just the true South, not Texas necessarily or Florida, just the true South, they live and breathe by everything down there. I mean, if an Alabama fan even can breathe the same air as Nick Saban, their whole life is made. So I'm going to have to agree with you there.
Yeah, no, They tailgate in the Midwest, but the tailgates that they have in the South, it's like that's their full-time job. They bring suitcases with satellite dishes in them so they can watch other games that are happening the rest of the day. And when I went to LSU, I met somebody like in the airport on the way down from Chicago, and he invited me to his RV, like pig roast. And like they had like a cauldron full of... like, I don't know what it was, but it was really
Everclear.
Good.
It had to have been Everclear. There's no doubt.
This food, but like they had to, the cauldron had so much food in it. They had to stir it with this thing that looks like a canoe paddle that they had to work for. And so you don't see that as much. I love going to Wisconsin games, and I wouldn't do it over and go anywhere else, but it's just a little bit different down there.
It is. Well, and I also would be remiss not to mention that the tailgating scene in Oxford, Mississippi at Ole Miss is insane, too. I mean, I've spent a lot of time there. And the fact that the girls are walking around in stilettos and dresses and all the tailgate tents have chandeliers hanging from them, it's crazy to me that they do that. But there's nothing like college football in the South, that's for sure.
So pivoting to the podcast that you do with Manziel and his agent, Eric Burkhart, what would you say is like the most poignant thing that has come out of it during this season for you?
I think the most interesting thing for me is because I obviously followed Johnny when he was in school. I was still at A&M when he played and then covered him his first year when he won the Heisman, my first year out of school. I think that the biggest thing that I've noticed in this podcast is that he is a different human than he is perceived now. Now, he comes out and he admits, you know, he made mistakes. He actually, the episode that dropped this Thursday that just came out, he said, you know, my thought process in 2014 is wildly different than my thought process now. And it's not about perfection for me, it's about progress. And I think that's the most poignant thing that comes out of this is that he really is trying to prove that he deserves, you know, his comeback season. And whether that happens on the football field or not, I mean, that's to be determined. The CFL, his first season didn't go as well as planned. But I think what stands out to me is that he actually is legitimately trying to change that narrative. And if people listen to the podcast, I think they would hear that. They still hear the same Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football stories, but you hear somebody that realizes that they're lucky to have a second chance and that hopefully he can continue to prove that to people.
Well, he's trying to mount this comeback at a pretty advantageous time if you're looking at it from like a 3 to 4 year time horizon, because when they launched the AAF, which is backed by Dick Ebersol's son, and they have a TV deal with CBS, and then a year later, the XFL is coming. Like, if you're those leagues, like, and you're Memphis or whatever, don't you want to bring in Manziel and have a layer of intrigue to your games? I have to imagine he's going to get a shot to be really featured at least in one of those two leagues.
Well, he's the type of guy that's so polarizing, whether you love Johnny Manziel, whether you hate Johnny Manziel, there's nobody that's apathetic to him, right? I mean, people all the time, I get tweeted, we get chirped a lot, like, well, this guy's a wash up, this is guy, whatever, but he pulls headlines still. And so at any point, I mean, if he's proving he can still play football, which, he's starting in the CFL right now. They've got one game left where we sit, but he can still play. We don't know if he can be an NFL quarterback. We don't know that ever. I mean, when he was in Cleveland, he was so messed up. We didn't get to see that from him, but he still pulls headlines. People still pay attention to what he's doing. They still download. TMZ's still all over him because they know his name sells. So as long as he can play football and he still has that clout to his name that's attached right now, I don't see why these leagues wouldn't go after him because he's a celebrity.
Do you think that there was something to him in the peak that he was almost in like an Office Space like trance where there was not, he was just like totally unflappable and just not, he wasn't ignorant to it, but he was totally agnostic to any chaos around him affecting his temperament at all. And it just was like a constantly worsening spiral.
Yeah, that's probably pretty accurate. And I think that he would say that as well. I mean, we've talked a lot about his time at A&M. We had, his offensive coordinator, now Texas Tech head coach Cliff Kingsbury, on one of the podcast episodes we had. And that you could tell that when Johnny was at A&M, he was so good at what he did. He thought partying actually made him better. I mean, those were words coming out of his mouth that he said on the podcast, that he believed that what he was doing and all the drinking he was doing and the going out and staying out late and then performing at the level that he did made him Johnny Football. So then he goes to the NFL and that doesn't work there. We know that. That's not going to fly when you're playing with the best people in the world. And I think it started to spiral out of control and he didn't know how to stop it. And I think that it took him a while, even after he got cut by the Browns, to realize that, which is why now when you do talk to him, whether it's on air or off air, you see that kind of light bulb saying like, holy cow, I knew that what I was doing was wrong, but I was still so good at it that I figured I could keep going. And then once it all crashed down, it was too late to fix.
So now I have a question about the college football show that you guys do. I don't want to relitigate like all of the controversies Barstool has been in its decade plus history. But so there's a lot of people like often online, there will be a piece and it'll circulate and there will be a lot of people in the media or who follow the media closely who say they really don't like Barstool. But then when you go on the road and you draw hundreds, if not thousands of people who are like very passionate about what you guys do and coming out to see you when there are lots of other things they can be doing before a football game, isn't the dichotomy of that crazy?
It is. Well, and I mean, I know you've done podcast episodes and you've had conversations with both Dave Portnoy and Erica Nardini, so you understand what Barstool is. And I think that that's the biggest difference when you see a lot of these headlines online and a lot of people who just really hate not only what we do here, but hate Dave. I mean, that's like the biggest thing. That's the crux of the whole thing, is they really just don't like Dave. Then you get the other side of people who actually consume everything that Barstool does, who understands that it's not just these headline hit pieces, that they listen to the radio, they listen to the podcast, they consume the blogs. I think that the people that are coming out for the college football show love everything Barstool does because it's entertaining to them. They love sports. They love comedy. They love being able to just get away from their real life. Whereas the hit pieces take one quote from one of those episodes and say, this is what Barstool stands for. And the biggest thing I can look at is, people say things all the time that are either taken out of context. At the end of the day, if you like Barstool Sports, you know that this is full of a bunch of good people who are just trying to entertain. If you believe that Barstool is a bad place, we can't change your mind. So that's where you see the difference, is people come out because they support us, and then people hate us because they don't understand us, and that's just the way it is, and that's the reason it's so successful, I think.
Have you ever had a person come up to you on the street and had like a negative interaction about it because of Barstool, or is it universally people who come up to you and say that they love your work?
Most of it is very positive, and I've only been at Barstool since the end of February, early March, so I'm still pretty brand new, but I was in Boston before, so obviously, you know, having a footprint in Boston, being a Boston-based company that Barstool is, most of it's been positive. But I will say, when I first made the decision to come to Barstool, to leave NBC Sports and leave network TV to come to New York, there were a few people that would come up, and it was more about, like, how in the world could you throw away a television career to go work for a frat boy company? I mean, that was said to me multiple times, and it was always like, you know, you're too good for those frat boys, or you're too good to be thrown into the mix. And it goes back to what I just said. They just don't understand what Barstool is. They don't understand the platform that I can sit up here and I can talk about football all day, every day, and don't have to jump into that quote frat boy culture at all. And people are listening to it. So mostly positive, but definitely some negative too. Not as much in New York. People in New York that stop us, they love Barstool. That's for sure.
I wanted to kind of go through your career path. So you just mentioned you were at NBCSN and you were at ESPN before that. Could you have like ever envisioned that now at age 30, which you just wrote a blog post about turning 30, that you would be like doing all of these different types of things in audio and video, travel, like internet, satellite radio, et cetera?
Not at all. And growing up, I always wanted to be a sports broadcaster. And I wrote about that in that blog. That's all I've ever wanted to do. And when I was growing up, it was, you wanted to be Erin Andrews, right? Like, she's like the end all be all. That's what you saw. And she's obviously made an incredible career for herself. But being a sideline reporter was like what you thought you had to do. And you know, that's the path that you carved out for yourself. So that's what I set out to do. And I spent a couple years on the sidelines with ESPN and the SEC network. And, you know, what I really found, a lot of other things went into it, but sideline reporting was just not my strong suit. I could do it and I enjoyed doing it and it was a lot of fun. But at the same time, my personality didn't get to come out as much. My opinions definitely didn't. And I'm full of them, you know, for better or worse. But to sit back and, yeah, for better or worse. I mean, if you ask my parents, I'd probably say for worse. But going back into radio after everything kind of circled and went down with ESPN, it was like, okay, what am I going to do and how can I use this voice? And to look back now and see that I thought being a sideline reporter was the end all be all and having to kind of claw my way back into getting that opinion on air, even if it was just, you know, satellite radio or internet radio, to me, looking back, it's a crazy wild ride. And Barstool is the epitome of all those things. I get to travel like I used to. I get to talk on, you know, college football and talk about whatever I want. And I'm not censored. That's the biggest thing. I'm not censored at all. We are who we are. So it's kind of the best of all the worlds that I envisioned for myself.
When you were at ESPN, it was obviously under a different regime. And now, like, things are a little bit different. There's some similarities, some differences. But based on when I read your story, I thought, it's kind of interesting that under the new regime, Laura Rutledge and Maria Taylor, who also came up as sideline reporters on the SEC network, they're getting to do some opinion stuff on Get Up now. And I don't think that that path necessarily would have been available to them 3 or 4 years ago. It's ESPN is starting to realize, along with everybody else, that you got to play positionless basketball. And having people like just saying, okay, this person's a sideline reporter, this person reports NBA or NFL nuggets, and having like one specialty for everything, almost like an assembly line, is not the way to spread out into further platforms.
You're right. I mean, it's like getting put into a box, right? I mean, that's the way it seemed like to me. And of course, I was in my mid-20s and I was a young girl from Texas and whatever. So I kind of fit that mold. But Laura Rutledge is actually my best friend. I don't know if you knew that, but she is my best friend on this planet. And I'm so proud of what she's done, because you're right. She was put into a not necessarily a box, because she's always been somebody that can kind of cross over those lines covering Major League Baseball and the other things that she's done. But now getting to see how that's grown for her, it's like, well, this makes sense, because just because you're reporting on the sidelines and interviewing coaches doesn't mean you don't have an opinion on LeBron's game last night. So getting to see her growth through that, you're absolutely right. The opportunities are different. And it's not just with ESPN. I think it's just this world in general. And I think that's why Barstool is so cool, from the fact that they were noticing that people who aren't classic traditional TV personalities can also be really successful. You look at Pardon My Take. I mean, a few years ago, like, you can't imagine, you know, Big Cat and PFT being as successful as they are because it was just so different from the guys you see on TV. And now I think across the board, you're looking at everyone realizing, okay, we need to put more people where their strong suits are, and maybe they're strong in multiple different avenues. And Laura is a prime example of that. And that's why I'm really happy that I'm at Barstool, because Dave lets us all do that. If you love sports, you can do it. If you want to be a stand-up comedian, you can do it. Or if you want to be Chicks in the Office and talk pop culture, you can do it, because everybody has different skill sets and you should utilize them.
Well, I want to disagree with one thing you said, and Mike, our producer, will agree with you. I saw a Big Cat and PFT commenter coming from 1,000 miles away, and I wrote about them way before anybody else was. So I saw it coming. But
I mean, they're fantastic. I mean, they are monsters, and that's the thing, is like, anybody who listens to Pardon My Take knows that they're so different, which is why they're so successful. But I think, like, in general with Barstool, like, if you go back even 5 years ago, if you would say, oh, we have a SiriusXM channel that's 24 hours, we have this massive college football show that travels, they have an NFL show on, you know, Sunday mornings, like, I think you're like, what are you talking about? How is that company going to do that? And Pardon My Take has really helped that audience, because so many people listen to them and they're like, oh, wait, Barstool Sports, I want to check that out. So I love being attached to those guys because they are so talented, but they're different. And that's why they've been so successful. They're hilarious.
So I want to make sure I word this in a way that isn't offensive, and I don't mean at Barstool or anything, but as someone with blonde hair and blue eyes, has that made you feel kind of an extra chip on your shoulder of wanting to prove yourself as an opinionated sports personality, as opposed to, and I'm not saying sideline reporters are only there for their appearance, but I'm saying, do you feel having that appearance of wanting to get your opinions out there more?
Yeah, and it's not offensive at all. And I actually like when I'm asked that question, because it gives me the opportunity to answer it without being like, well, I know people think that I could be cute or attractive, because then I just look like I'm full of myself, which is not the point at all. It's one of the hardest things for me in going through this, is not only just having the blonde hair and the blue eyes, that does play a factor, but it's like, people know I didn't play football. They can take one look at me and be like, well, you definitely did not play in the NFL, so you don't know what you're talking about. But then you do add into that, you know, I'm still kind of young, still, you know, a little bit in my early parts of my career. And it's like, people assume that you are there solely because of the way that you look. And I think that that is something that sideline reporters battle, because a lot of times when you see things on social media, it's like, are they hot or not? Like, this girl's hot, this girl's not hot, this girl's hotter than this one. Whereas when you have opinions, you have to actually listen to what they're saying, which is why I love radio, which is why I look back at the beginning of my career and I'm really thankful that I didn't have a camera on my face, because people actually had to listen to me and agree with me or disagree with me. And if they didn't like me, it was because of my opinions, not because of the way that I looked. So it's a constant fight, but at the same time, it's obviously a benefit, because you're different than all the men in the room. And it's getting better where there are more women, and there are more women being able to give their opinion no matter what they look like. So you've kind of got to balance that. But I mean, I'm not stupid. I know that it helps, but I also know that it's a detriment in trying to prove that I actually do know what I'm talking about. So still trying to find that balance every day.
That was a good answer. I appreciate your giving a good answer to my clumsy question. But
no, I liked the question. I really appreciate when people ask me that, because like I said, I don't want to look like a jerk coming out and being like, well, I know people think that I'm on TV because I have blonde hair. Like, that's not a good look for me either.
As you look out 5 years, what is something in content or as like a media member that you want to accomplish that you haven't yet?
So one of the things I wanted to do when I was growing up, and I never really knew how to verbalize it till I got older, was I want somebody, whether it's me, I'd love it for it to be me, but somebody to kind of be the female Skip Bayless. And when I say that, not necessarily like just Skip's takes, right? Like, I mean, Skip's takes sometimes are off the wall, but somebody who has made such a massive career for themselves just arguing and giving the opinions. And it's the whole thing with me is, if you're apathetic to somebody's career, they're not doing well. Well, there's, again, talking about Johnny Manziel, there's nobody that's apathetic to Skip Bayless either. So when I look ahead in the future, like, I picture myself wanting to sit at a desk with a microphone in my face, whether it's with Barstool, who knows what this media landscape is going to look like, but I assume Barstool is just going to continue to go to the moon, and just being able to just say and speak the opinions to where everybody is paying attention to it. And Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith, those guys have really carved out careers for themselves like that. And I think this is a great place to do it. So I'm excited. But there's not a woman really in those roles. I mean, there's absolutely women that are skilled enough to do that and that are talented enough to do that. But you don't see a woman and a man arguing. You usually see two men arguing with a woman in the middle. And I think that that should change in some sometime soon, I hope.
So the closest things to what you're describing, I think that they wanted that out of Jemele Hill. And then when everything happened with the Trump stuff, like, I think if the political environment of the previous 8 years had continued 8 years and it wasn't something that sports people were obsessed and talking about all the time, then she would have had a better chance to accomplish that. I'm not saying it definitely would have happened, but I think that she would have been given every opportunity. And I think Rachel Nichols has it with the NBA, where she can get big people like Mark Cuban and Jimmy Butler at their most newsworthy for sit-down interviews. She gives monologues that nobody is interrupting her for 8 minutes at a time. And I think, like, that's not the same thing as Skip, because Skip gets to sit there and do that about every sport, but it's the closest to what you're hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, Rachel Nichols is a great example. Doris Burke is somebody who's, you know, very well respected in what she does. And there's a lot of women that I think would be great in those roles. And it's not necessarily on, you know, the women in the industry side to get up there. It's more of like the networks changing. Like we've mentioned, just the evolution of different networks of ESPN, allowing Maria, allowing Laura these opportunities. It's these executives, these networks getting out and saying, okay, well, we're going to put it out there. We're going to put a female versus a Skip Bayless and see how it goes. And I think a lot of people would be pleasantly surprised how well it would go. And it's just kind of keep fighting for that. And that's, I keep going back to this, and I'm not just saying this because it's paying my salary and paying my rent, but Barstool is so attractive to somebody like me because you do get that opportunity with the same opportunities to talk traditional sports and getting to do those interviews. And I think that's why everyone's trying to keep up with Barstool right now. It's like, why are they so successful in everything that they do? Because you're not putting anybody in a box and you're allowing those personalities come out. And just to see where it's all growing and where it's going to grow in the next 5 years, who knows what we're going to be looking at, but I'm excited for that. That's for sure.
Is there anything we didn't talk about, college football, Barstool, your career, general sports media, that you want to discuss right now?
Well, I do have one question, college football, for you, and then I have one more thing I want to say about Barstool, because I always say this. But do you think that OU could potentially be in the college football playoff? Because I had this argument this morning, and I want your opinion on this.
Mike, you answer this, because you don't think so.
I do not think they will be in the college football playoff.
There's no possibility in your mind that they could be?
I don't see how they could be. I think you're going to end up with an SEC team. You're going to end up with
them, right?
Yeah. You need a couple of teams to lose in front of them. But
I agree with that. But see, the reason that we started talking about this is because I love Kyler Murray. Like, I think that Tua is going to win the Heisman, but I'm a huge Kyler Murray fan, even though he left A&M and it broke everybody's heart. But I think that the Big 12 right now is the cannibalism that's going on. We started talking about it. And if other things fell, I think Oklahoma is going to win the Big 12 championship. I think that they could sneak in. But I was told earlier today there's 0.0% chance that Oklahoma can make it in, and I felt like that was an incorrect take, so that's why I had to ask you guys. But apparently,
if the Big Ten West wins the Big Ten championship game, then that cancels out the conference in all likelihood, and that's like maybe the path that they would need.
Yeah, and the Pac-12, I mean, Washington State's there, and that's cannibalism too. And then Notre Dame is really just kind of screwing it up for everybody outside of, like, in the Power Five. I mean, I think Notre Dame's going to win out, but that we have these arguments all the time. And I would love for sometimes for people with like level heads. We don't have very many level heads here at Barstool. I'm certainly not level headed. So a lot of these arguments kind of break out. But Alabama's going to win this weekend and Georgia's going to win this weekend. And then we're going to see what happens. But I think Oklahoma will probably be left out. I'm upset about that, but I still think there's a chance.
Oh, so to get in, basically what needs to happen is Oklahoma needs to win out, Notre Dame needs to lose, and like Northwestern needs to win the Big Ten title game.
Yes. Yeah. That would make sense. And maybe Washington State lose.
It's not impossible. Like, if you put out enough like simulations of the universe, we could come up to one where that happens, but it is highly improbable then, I'd say.
Yeah, but at least you're on my side of that it's not completely impossible. So it's highly, like, it's not highly probable, but it's not impossible.
Yeah, so I'll agree with you there. Speaking of Kyler Murray, it's very unfair that we are going to lose him to baseball, where I can't imagine, I love baseball, but I can't imagine that he's going to be like that magnetic of a player as he is at football. And it's because of the NCAA wage scale and the NFL rookie wage scale. It's a no-brainer for him to play baseball instead. I get it. It was the smart decision for Jeff Samardzija, even though Jeff Samardzija would have been a more interesting football player than baseball player, but it stinks.
It does stink, and I'm fully on board with having the, you know, the long, lengthy conversation with anybody about paying college football players, or just really just the whole student athlete thing. And I know it's like a whole like cycle, and I always call it a like hamster effect, because every time you come up with something, you flip yourself on your head. But I think that if there was something better for Kyler Murray, not just with the NFL stuff, but also in college, like I think we'd be seeing him play football, because he obviously loves football. He's incredible at it. I know they're in the Big 12, and so they don't play any defense, but I would love to see him play football. I know that's very selfish of me, just because I like football more than baseball. But at the same time, if I'm his age and I'm getting millions of dollars put on the table for a sport that's not going to beat my body up near as much as football, it'd be hard to turn down.
And what was the last thing you wanted to say about Barstool?
I was going to say, and I know I kind of hit on it earlier, but one thing, if people are listening that don't really know Barstool, I would really recommend going to the website or turning on the radio or looking at the podcast, because even if you hate sports, which a lot of my girlfriends are not into sports, which how we're friends, I'm not sure, but you know, I live and breathe sports. They don't like it, but like going on, there's something for everybody. And that's something that when I first took this job that a lot of my even closest friends and family didn't understand. They're like, well, I don't really want to go listen to a whole bunch of dudes swearing and talking football. But it's like, if you love stand-up comedy, you can get that. If you love skits, if you love pop culture, if you love sports, if you love all of it, it's all on there. And I think the perception of Barstool is changing. Bringing somebody like Erica in, bringing somebody like me in who is at network TV or other people who they've done in the past as well, just give it a chance. You know, just go and figure out. And if it's not for you across the board, it would shock me, but it's not for you. But at least, to, you know, don't always look at what Dave Portnoy has said in a vacuum and assume that he's a bad dude, because he's not. I'm very lucky to work here, and I'm really glad I get to talk about it. So thank you for having me on to talk about it.
Thank you for coming on. Once again, that's Casey Smith, Barstool Sports. You can catch her Comeback Season podcast, College Football Studio Show, and across their SiriusXM radio station, Channel 85. Thank you again, Casey.
Anytime. Thank you so much.
Touched her.